Keeping it real. When The Real Housewives of Orange County premiered almost 10 years ago, I was going to take a pass on this latest reality show. Real Housewives? Seriously? Why on earth would I want to watch women doing housework? I don't even like my own chores of daily existence. In fact, there are some weeks that I barely do the minimum one must do to subsist. I was tired of the Martha Stewarts and other lifestyle gurus that had bombarded my inbox and my home improvement shows for years. Then I saw the previews and the buzz started on the internet, and I became very aware that this was not housewife in the middle class way I understood it. Oh, no. This was something completely different and horrifyingly delicious. The first time I turned on the show, I had the classic conflict of the proverbial devil and angel on my shoulders. The Unitarian Universalist in me that holds up the worth and dignity of every person was shouting in my head, "Turn that channel! Do not watch this train wreck of human relations and let it suck you in." The societal need in me to watch the accident occurring on screen in front of me said, "Don't you dare turn that channel. Have you ever seen something or someone act in such a deliciously volatile way?" Well, as you can tell by the title of this sermon, the voyeur in me prevailed. I watched the entire season and the next one. It is my guilty pleasure and one of my deepest secrets. What would my colleagues and fellowship families think of me that I obsessively watch The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? All right, and to be perfectly honest, The Real Housewives of Orange County and The Real Housewives of New York. I'm an educated woman with 2 degrees of higher education, and I hide the fact that I watch these superficial shenanigans of these Botox divas. Is this going to kill my brain cells? Is this going to weaken my moral tenets of Unitarian Universalism that I've spent a lifetime building? Do I have to give up my NPR membership or back to the Harbinger of Good Taste? To those of you who have abstained from this media phenomenon that is The Real Housewives, let me offer an explanation. The Real Housewives franchise started with a man named Scott Dunlap. He lived in a very exclusive and wealthy gated community in Orange County. Scott became fascinated with the subculture in which he lived, and in particularly the image-obsessed, status-conscious housewives that filled their time with high-priced leisure activities. What would happen when cameras were sent into the families of the uber-rich? It was this curiosity that started this multi-million dollar franchise, with new housewives and new cities being rolled out to the delight of millions of viewers. The Real Housewives of Bravo fill their days with gossiping, shopping, grooming, scheming, and feuding. What they do not do naturally is housework. To understand why this show has become exceedingly popular and a pop culture phenomenon, we need to consider women's roles in traditionally televised housewife positions. One of the most recognizable definitions of housewife was televised into American family households is that of June Cleaver in the 1960s. Our conception of the housewife was one of conformity, banality, and stifling domesticity. Women whose roles were strictly to provide material, since they typically had to work to put food upon the table. Today, I am just addressing what the mainstream and publicly commercialized conception of what a housewife has been. When we jump ahead a couple of decades and examine how housewives are portrayed, they have morphed from the June Cleavers into the anxious helicopter moms of the 1990s. With more and more women working outside the home for dual incomes, women not only had to be lifestyle goddesses like Martha Stewart, who dominated in the early part of the century, they had to do it all while working full time. We were supposed to be in the perfect house, decorated by do-it-yourself projects that no one would know by looking at them that they were do-it-yourself. The point was and is that you would make sure that you were properly lauded by your guests and for your accomplishments when you called your attention to it. Did you see that I hung the damask wallpaper in the sitting room? Why, yes, I hand-dyed that paper and made it myself from the clippings in our organic gardens. With a dismissive wave of the hand, it was a gesture and conversation at once meant to suggest that anyone with two hands could accomplish the same task, and to bring subtle shame upon the visitor for not taking as much pride as they do in their house. Conversations were done in innuendos and in home improvement shows. No one saw the army of assistants it took to make that room or DIY project flawless. We just saw pristine women dressed in muted pastels with serene smiles on their unfazed faces as they showed the viewer that the house was to always be meticulously cleaned with homemade organic cleaning products. The lawns and grounds were maintained, and the children were impeccably groomed and educated. It was a ludicrously sterile environment. Nothing ruffled these unattainable or unsustainable concept of house riflery. According to Karina Cacciano in a New York Times article, we as women were, quote, ideologically opposed to and functionally cut off from such a lifestyle, end quote. Thankfully, that version of what a real housewife is supposed to be has fallen by the wayside, much in thanks to the Real Housewives franchise and the new transparency that is encouraged with reality TV. The Real Housewives are nothing like the aforementioned lifestyle gurus. They do not handle each situation with grace and do not have the least notion of how to hang wallpaper or any desire to ruin their manicure in the process. In short, they will never, ever, ever make you feel badly about yourself or your domestic capabilities. Unlike the Martha Stewarts, the Real Housewives will readily show and brag to the viewers about the multitude of help it took to pull off a party or decorating a room. There's absolutely no shame in their game. And to be more correct, they feel no shame, even when perhaps a dose of humility would do them a world of good. Thinking of these women, if you've ever seen The Real Housewives, you would probably be appalled. These women with their Brazilian blowouts, the sleek hair, and even smoother lifestyles. Their skin has been waxed and lasered, so no hair on their body hasn't been planned on or perfectly coiffed. We actually know this as viewers because we're privy to bonding girls' moments when the two of them go into the estheticians together. You would think the segment of the show would stop right there after their consultation with their doctor or nurse about the latest placenta peel or diamond microderm abrasion facial with moonbead dust that was collected by the U.S. Space Team expeditions. But it doesn't end there. The cameras are allowed into the room with the women. I have seen these women waxed, plucked, injected, manipulated, their saran-wrapped bodies from head to toe looking like space-age mummies as the latest cream desperately tries to delay the natural process of aging. These are hilarious and hideously private moments. You watch in horror and cringe in pain with them and at them with the self-righteous assertions that you would never engage in such frivolity and never, even if you did, let cameras record every moment of it. It is this transparency that is amazing to me. Almost nothing is off limits to these cameras as they bear their bodies and feelings on national television. How often have we heard about Reverend David talk about being more transparent in our lives and relations with others? In fact, the Unitarian Universalist Association has a committee called the Open UUA Committee, which is constantly encouraging and calling upon Unitarians to be more open. In the document entitled What Transparency Looks Like, they say, quote, ultimately, transparency is about more than governance. It is about building relationships of trust and honesty. Transparency is essential to personal relationships, to a religious community, and to a religious movement. Secrecy destroys trust and therefore erodes community. When trust is lacking, people cannot come together in good faith or commit themselves to a vision of a common future. While the Real Housewives are rarely joined together to ensure a fair and mutually agreed upon plan of action, their modeling of transparency is commendable. Whether their transparency is motivated by altruism or more likely the desperation to stay relevant and on the show, the women have demonstrated the value of being more honest to people about how they are feeling. This makes me a better director of religious education because when I am teaching a class or doing pastoral counseling, being empathetic is sometimes just not enough. Giving children examples of real life situations of when you have failed or personal stories of success are just as, if not more, valuable than using folklore to demonstrate the religious point you're trying to narrate. Transparency with children and youth means that when you ask for it in return, there is no excuse for them to not give it. You have been completely real with them. And with the respect due to your healthy relationship and mutual admiration, the honesty you're looking for in them will come. The emotional capital that I gain from sharing appropriate coming-of-age stories with youth is invaluable. They have learned from my cringeworthy adolescent mistakes, the first kiss stories, the lessons I have learned from brushes with the mean girls of the popular clique. Whether they take my stories with laughter or a roll of their eyes, the only thing that matters to me is if they find themselves embroiled in a melodrama of teenage angst, that they remember they have a kinship with an adult who has been in a similar position and would understand. As youth isolate themselves and draw wide moats around themselves, defending their emotions and actions from any adult intruders, my transparency is the building block of the bridge that can reach across that chasm. The Real Housewives have shown me by sharing the silly, the inane, and the mortifying that they can elicit tender feelings towards even the most shallow of individuals. Another thing that the Real Housewives have mastered is the art of assertiveness. They rarely triangulate. If they have a problem with another cast member, they immediately talk to that person about that misunderstanding. Since they rarely diffuse the situation, instead intensify the conflict, it makes for great television. There are many reasons why the Real Housewives should not be held up as role models. However, the way they tackle the situation head-on is admirable. When I am teaching Our Whole Lives, the Unitarian Universalist sexuality curriculum, students come into the class thinking it's just going to be about bodily functions and bodily reactions. It's just a fraction of the course. One of the most valuable constructs of the course, and that OWL facilitators mostly concentrate on, is communication. In fact, about 75% of the lessons are centered around the art of conversations. We talk and define scenarios and people's reactions to them as either passive-aggressive, aggressive, or assertive communication. When communicating feelings, it is essential that everyone do so in an assertive manner. We have all experienced people in our lives who react in a passive-aggressive manner, which drives us to disdain and our avoidance of them. The aggressive communicators are intimidating, and they quickly lose their effectiveness in groups. The youth learn that while behaving with transparency and with assertive, honest communication is essential to growing healthy relationships in any situation. Whether it is communicating something of importance to your parents, your teachers, your peer group, your partner, or larger communities, doing it with an upfront assertiveness leads to wonderful results. Having a voice that people respect and listen to is a much less frustrating and productive way to conduct one's life. The Real Housewives, whether it is an alcohol-fueled need for clarity or exhibitionism on the camera, those women sure know how to address a problem. They all have a distinctive voice, and if they spent more time talking about their charities instead of Pinot Grigio, the world would be a much better place. But that kind of takes the fun out of it. Message aside, what I find remarkable and somewhat inspiring is that they all recognize their inherent worth to voice whatever, whenever, despite it not being entirely appropriate. That courage or blind faith in their ability to be heard just speaks to their economic privileged station that they hold in society. They know that people are listening because they are either paying them to, or perhaps they've been affirmed by society so much and so frequently throughout their lives because money talks. Regardless, one can glean from the show that having a strong voice is essential in a reality show or upper echelons of economic status. In Unitarian Universalism, one of our seven principles is everyone has a voice. From an early age, children are encouraged to exercise their acceptance and membership of this beloved fellowship community. The Joys and Sorrows microphone is a key example of this. We lift up every accomplishment, no matter how small. My favorite are the tooth fairy visits. And we join them in sorrow for every broken arm or lost pet. In religious education classes at the fellowship, we work time into every lesson for the students to voice their feelings and opinions. I am always very aware that the topics we tackle in class are deep, and conversations may grow organically in a different direction from when the lesson calls for. If it is a particularly spirited discussion, I have scrapped lessons in the middle of a class and had some of the most meaningful and powerful time with our children, led by their incredible voices. I am proud of this congregation, for here at this fellowship, we walk the talk of youth and child empowerment. We have youth appointed to our governing board of this congregation and the worship committee. They perform special music on Sundays, and our YRUU and Coming of Age Sundays are some of the most highest attended Sundays of the year. Their voices and opinions are valued, and most of all, thanks to you, appreciated and validated. We are currently growing strong Unitarian Universalist children, children that will change this world, children that will not stand idly by as people are subjugated. They will solve human rights issues, contribute to the solution of the world environmental crisis. They will change public policy as elected officials, and they will become our future ministers and tend to our congregations with the greatest of care. We launch young adults that have the skills to speak assertively, love deeply, and will not abide injustice. They are going to set the world ablaze with their passion, and I cannot wait. Their future vision begins with us. It begins with this collective Unitarian Universalist community. It is all of us affirming children and youth as they search for their religious values. By creating designated areas for them to step into leadership positions throughout the congregation, we prepare them to step into larger community arenas. The Real Housewives have also reminded me about a very basic human truth. They remind me that people will do anything, say anything, when they are in pain. With their brutal words and scathing comments and withering stares, they decimate anyone as they lash out at some perceived or very real slight. They teach me that the line between real and not real, significant and insignificance, can blur in an instant, and how the most inconsequential and banal of statements can suddenly become the axis in which the world tilts. These women show us that all treaties forged through heart-to-hearts are thrown out the window, how in conflict nothing is taboo, even prearranged upon rules are broken. The Real Housewives have reminded me how small skirmishes can escalate into world wars. What is even more apparent and appalling in these skirmishes is that they've been manipulated by directors and producers. It is eerie how the puppeteers manipulate them, pitting them against each other in order to make good TV. There is absolute correlation between these privileged princesses and how governments or other collective agencies manipulate people for money. People with global power and no pull in a specific region, to protect their investments, will feed the conflict not with alcohol like the TV producers do, but they will feed the conflict by supplying guns and weapons. We know that this never works. It works in the short term. The investments are protected. But how many small groups has the U.S. armed to help fight against tyranny, only to have them turn into extremists? Extreme groups that will harm schools full of children, marketplaces full of civilians, just to make a point. One can argue that instead of guns and weapons training, what people really need and want is an opportunity to be heard. It seems hopeless. However, in the last season ending of The Real Housewives of Atlanta, all the women were sitting on the couches with a host, sniping and throwing emotional grenades at one another, when one woman broke down in an honest, soul-bearing way. Seeing that strong cast member cry about an abusive childhood memory, they realized that this was a very real moment. They ended up huddled together on the side of the set, outside of the glaring lights, but with the cameras rolling, they embraced as a group. The Real Housewives proved that peace can be brokered with a surprisingly vulnerable moment and shared memory. In this microcosm of humanity, it was proven to me that by with open transparency, honest communication, assertiveness, and through shared experience, we can attain peace. Peace is attainable. I have no doubt that our children with Unitarian Universalist values are going to fix this broken and bruised world. They are going to fix it by watching us. And they are watching every moment. Every second, information is being streamed to them via the internet, social media, teachers, DREs, parents. We have to be intentional and transparent with them while we are assertively sharing our hopes, fears, and most importantly, our mistakes. It is terrifying to illuminate closeted skeletons to our children, or to anyone for that matter. Perhaps it is a family secret that needs exposure, or a behavior that caused another person pain, or a deep-seated regret that we did nothing in a situation that called for action. We as adults all have secrets or memories that we have buried. We hope, we pray, and we spend a lifetime of energy into assuring no one will uncover these truths. But by cloaking these mistakes in secrecy and not being transparent, we are merely ensuring that these mistakes or events will occur again and again with our children and our children's children. I am thinking of my great aunt, who was sexually abused by her brother as a young child. She told no one in a time where probably no one was listening. Her daughter was handed that legacy of abuse by the same man, and her ensured silence allowed her daughter, my great aunt's granddaughter, ensured that she was a victim as well by the same man. What I am proposing is by letting people see these secrets, by owning them, it will give us incredible power. It enables us to take a mistake or secret shame and acknowledge that it is one of our building blocks, a tenet upon which we make daily decisions, whether it is done consciously or unconsciously. This proposed transparency with loved ones deepens our reliability, our fallibility as humans, and ultimately strengthens relationships. Making sure the legacy of our mistakes ends with us so that our children, this community of beloved souls, and that world at large is a safer place.